As a musician, I always wanted to hold a mic in our church, and maybe I'll sing for you. Finally. All right. This morning, as we look at our Baptist history, and we each week are telling history of great men and women, I think 50 Baptists that everybody should know. And this morning, in my opinion, this is one of my favorite stories. Pastor Bowman just sighed and said, oh, no, I'll never get up here. Number 37, and this to me is one of the greatest stories in American history, I believe. And so I think you'll enjoy this morning. And George and Ethel Birch were godly Presbyterian missionaries in India. They had a son. A son was born to them, John, in 1918. 2 years later, they went back to the United States. Came back to the United States because of health issues, and it was there that they discovered liberalism in their denomination, the Presbyterian Church. And they began to attend a Baptist church where they soon were convinced by Scripture and joined that church, and they were baptized scripturally. John, their little boy, was saved and baptized at the age of 7. John was a very gifted young man, mentally gifted, and it was very evident at an early age. He could read and memorize in an unusual way. He skipped several grades and graduated early, but at the head of his class. When he was 11, he went to a missions conference, and his heart was stirred towards missions. And he was enthralled by the speakers that he heard. And several days later, his parents found a note in their living room, and it said this. He said, "The Lord is calling me to the mission field. I have the answer to the death wail of the lost." And there was no question from that day forward what he would do with his life. J. Frank Norris, the man we studied 2 weeks ago, was the pastor of the First Baptist Church in Fort Worth, Texas, and he held a meeting in Georgia the summer that John graduated from Mercer University, and it was there that John decided to go to J. Frank Norris's seminary in Fort Worth, and so he enrolled in the Bible Baptist Seminary studying for the ministry, and there he studied under Norris for a year and a half. The Lord called him to China, and he went to China under the auspices of the First Baptist Church of Fort Worth. As our stories are interesting how they entwine. And it was July of 1940 when he arrived in China. Within a year, this is his gifted mind, within a year he had learned the Chinese language. And he began a very effective work with the Chinese in their war-torn country. He gave himself to preaching, to starting Baptist churches, and encouraging the Chinese Christians at great personal sacrifice to himself. He would have been very famous, I believe, and we know that now that he would be very famous had the English-speaking world known of his exploits and of his sacrifices, but that was not to be. Japan, for its part, had invaded China and was at war with China. The U.S. was putting immense pressure upon Japan in support of the Nationals Chinese. These are the good guys. You'll hear me refer to the Nationals Chinese once in a while. Just in history, so you know, they would eventually form the nation of Formosa, which is now Taiwan. So these are the good Chinese, in a sense of politically speaking. And as we supported General Chiang Kai-shek and the Nationalist Chinese, trying at the same time to stay out of the conflict and not get involved in a war with Japan. As the Chinese-Japanese War progressed, John's mission support dwindled to almost nothing, and eventually even his place of service came under Japanese occupation. This didn't stop him as he continued to win souls and zealously spread the gospel and minister to the Baptist churches there in occupied China. But the entire world was soon to be plunged into war as Japan was readying to attack the United States. And they did that on December 7th, 1941, as they attacked the United States at Pearl Harbor. And we were now at war with the nation of Japan, the Empire of Japan. In this situation, John felt that he should volunteer to join the U.S. Army. And he did that. His concern was that he thought this was the best way to help his country, the United States, and the best way to help the Chinese who he had come to serve. His fluency with the language and familiarity with the culture of the people made him invaluable to the United States as an ordained minister. He became a chaplain for a while, but then General Chenault, the great man General Chenault, asked him to become an intelligence officer and work behind enemy lines and supply the Air Force with much-needed information. His role as a missionary and an American intelligence officer is really unprecedented, what he was able to accomplish. Right after the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor is one of the greatest or most thrilling stories of World War II. And many of you will know this story, but I'll just preface it by saying we can't imagine living in those dark days. We have never, none of us in this room have experienced the dark days of December and January of 1941. I would say America's mood was not only devastated, but probably hopeless. The Japanese in one day destroyed almost all of our Navy. Now just think about that for a minute. All but maybe two ships in the Pacific for sure. And so we were a devastated nation. And the United States needed a more morale boost at that time. And a Colonel Jimmy Doolittle thought of this idea. It was a radical idea. He thought, why don't we do whatever we can to do a surprise bombing of Tokyo? That would set the Japanese on their heels because they never would expect that because they knew what they did to us. They were a very calculated attack. They knew exactly what they were doing to us. And so it wasn't that easy because the bombers couldn't fly that far normally, so they devised a plan to get an aircraft carrier within 400 miles of Japan. That's as close as they could get without being detected. And then launch these planes, which had never been able to fly off aircraft carriers before, of these type of planes, bombers, and bomb Tokyo. Well, there was only one problem with that plan. It was a great plan. And they worked for months to get it together. But the problem with the plan was it was a one-way ticket because when you're loaded with bombs and loaded with fuel, there was no coming back. You were going to bomb Tokyo, and then those planes would have to crash land in China. So the men knew, and Doolittle's men, his men knew, that this was probably a one-way ticket. But they eagerly volunteered, much-needed plan. This is a day of great heroes, folks, real heroes. I'll mention that in just a minute. But they did that, and they were detected 600 miles out, so it was really bad, and they had to fly out those ships. And they did bomb Tokyo, and all those planes crash-landed in China. Now, what's amazing is everybody survived the crash-landing. One crew was captured by the Japanese. They were later tortured and executed. But all the other crews and Doolittle himself survived amazingly. They wandered the Chinese landscape for a while, not knowing where they were, because I'll be honest with you, probably that part of the plan was not as developed because they didn't really think too many would survive. And so, but here's the amazing part of the story. God in his providence led John Birch to them. And he was able to take all those crews of men to United States troops into safety. A true American hero, just an amazing story, one of the most thrilling stories of World War II. John Birch was a remarkable soldier. Well, we jump forward now 4 years as the war comes to an end. John had some serious spiritual and political conclusions about the significance of the war, and very interesting thoughts. He wrote to his family, he said, "I believe that this war will set the stage for the Antichrist. I'll have a lot to tell you when I get home, things about the future of China and of the world." As he prepared to come home when the war was over, he and 11 other Americans and a couple of Chinese men, National Chinese, they had one last mission to settle some things with some weapons that were stored there in China. And however, they were detained by the communist Chinese. These were the red Chinese. And they demanded that he reveal the whereabouts of these weapons, and they demanded that he reveal the whereabouts of the nationalist Chinese, the good guys, the good Chinese, who the red Chinese hated and wanted to exterminate. John refused to divulge anything, thinking that these are our allies. The red Chinese are our allies, so, they can't. What are they going to do to me? But he refused to divulge anything. But on August 25th, 1945, John Birch was executed by these soldiers who were our allies. His personal assistant, Tung, was also shot and left for dead. but miraculously escaped. He was able to give an eyewitness account to what exactly happened and John's abuse at the hands of the Chinese. However, instead of holding the Chinese communists responsible for this hostile action, the American government decided that the incident should be hidden. They didn't want to agitate the communists. Some conspiracies are true. And the American government decided to hide that. The story of the murder of John Birch became a tightly guarded secret and actually wasn't declassified until President Reagan declassified it in the 1980s. Really a sad part of this story. A royal reporter who had been in China during that time wrote of John's life and his service in a letter to his parents. And he says, "Yesterday, I read of John's death and was very shocked. Your son was one of the finest men who ever came to China. He lived an exemplary life. He never did anything unkind to anyone. He believed that wars were and are due to the lack of belief in God. He exerted a profound effect upon the thousands of people who came in contact with him. His loss is a great loss, not only for China, but to America and the world. He loved China and the Chinese people dearly and planned to stay in China all his life. During the war, he performed many dangerous and heroic feats. As a member of U.S. intelligence and U.S. Army intelligence, he often parachuted into Japanese areas and spent weeks and months behind the lines preaching the gospel and ministering to the churches there. He was a beloved man in China and widely known over the entire continent." And he said, "I understand that no news agency was allowed to send out the story of your son's death from China for fear of arousing China, the Chinese communists and American relations to a higher pitch of instability. So his death was not mentioned in any news story from China. Otherwise, it would have been on the front page of every paper in the United States." That's a great testimonial to John. Years later, in 1958, the great anti-communist, this is where you may know the name, of course, we recognize the name, Robert Welch formed an organization that he wanted to uphold the traditional American values and the sovereignty of the United States Constitution. It became a great anti-communist organization, and Welch felt that John Birch embodied the greatest of Christian and American values, and he named the organization the John Birch Society, and that's where a name you may know. But John Birch was a great man, a true hero. He was a soldier of the cross and a hero for our country. He was an all-out fundamentalist who fought, took a stand against modernism as it creeped into the Southern Baptist Convention and into the churches there, especially when he was a seminary student. He went to China to help the fundamental Baptist churches there who were laboring faithfully in China. And he's never received the just reward, I think, and recognition for his World War II heroics. But the story, because of the testimony of the men who knew him and the family members who knew him, have inspired thousands of Christians for the last 75 years. How he lived and his accomplishments for Christ are one of the greatest American stories. And we want to thank the Lord for this man. You know, I think, I couldn't help but think, that in a day when even Christian young people have fictional Avengers posters on their bedroom walls as their heroes, parents, could I recommend to you John Birch as a true hero for your children? This was a great man of God and a great fundamental Baptist. And we thank the Lord this morning for him and his testimony.